Welcome to Season 2 of the Santam Ensure Your Future Money Bootcamp with me, Mapalo Maku.
And me, Maya Fisher-French. We invite you to join our money conversations and use these discussions as motivation and information to kickstart your own personal financial transformation. Now, in the last episode, we spoke about how to become a homeowner. We spoke about one of our mentees that is buying a home and how to budget and prepare for that. But of course, that does mean taking on debt, and it does mean having a good credit score.
Absolutely, Maya. And so today we have Brian Mpakwani from Summit Financial. They are a financial wellness company that also does debt review. So we'll be looking at the pros and cons of debt review.
Yeah, we're going to be looking at all aspects of credit and how to take that on. So welcome, Brian.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
So let's kickstart with understanding your credit score and also what do we mean by good and bad debt, Ryan?
Credit score is a summary or it's a three-digit number that summarizes basically your credit worthiness, which is determined by your payment behavior. It is determined by the number of credits that you have or number of credits that you take on, also determined by the length of credit. So that particular summary is what shows your credit worthiness to the credit providers when you start applying for debt. It shows that if you are, for instance, above 700, then you're a good consumer. And so when it comes to good debt versus bad debt, good debt is basically an investment into the present and the future self, of your future self, such as an example of a good debt would be buying a house, for instance. That is a good investment into the future, or investing in yourself, trying to increase your net worth, trying to increase your income by taking out a student loan. That is definitely one of the good debts, or even business debt. When we talk about bad debt, we're talking about debt that you take on that does not, or that decreases in value in terms of the future, as well as the interest, that are high interest. So that is an example of a bad debt, or it would be something like a personal loan, credit cards, and. So those are what we call bad debts. So the difference between good debts and bad debt is that good debt, it is debt that increases your future, your present and your future net worth. And then bad debt is one that takes away from you now.
I suppose even though if you're looking at a personal loan, it depends what it's being used for. So if the personal loan is just consumption debt, it's very different than maybe taking a personal loan to help your business, you know, exactly as you're saying. So it's about whether that loan is giving you an investment into your future or not.
Am I right? Yeah, 100%. And also a car, for example, Maya, sometimes we know that it's not called an asset as such, but I need to get to work, right, to make a living, to make an income, and hopefully grow my net worth eventually. So 100%, good debt and bad debt, it all depends on what is it that you're doing with that.
And of course, a car needs to get you from A to B. It doesn't need to get you to A and B in a huge amount of debt. So there's a level of car financing that starts to become unhealthy. But Brian, I want to go back to the credit score, because I've been looking at some credit scores recently as part of the Menti program that we're doing with Santam. And I've been very surprised to see people whose debt repayments are extremely high relative to their income. Yet they're showing as a good credit score. Yeah. What is happening there?
So if we're looking solely on the payment behavior, then that what's keeping their credit score a bit high. For instance, a person could be sitting at a DI ratio, for instance, of over 60-70%, meaning the amount you pay back towards your debt is more than what you have. But the fact of the matter is you're paying it on time every month. And that is what the credit providers are looking for. So as much as you are able to pay your debts on time every month without any skipping any payments, then it should keep your credit score at a stable place.
So basically, they will look, so your repayments will have one of the biggest impacts definitely, on your credit score.
Definitely.
But then I suppose it's up to the credit provider to decide whether or not to extend you more credit.
Yeah, 100%, Maya. And it's exactly what we're dealing with one of the mentees. All her income, down to the very last cent, Maya. And I'm not talking about her paying school fees for kids, groceries, and, you know, the things that you need to live. All of her salary goes to paying debt. The car, the house, credit card, and personal loan. She's able to pay them every single month, and her credit score is brilliant. And yet, after that, she doesn't have any money to buy groceries, for example. So now she has to chip in and ask family. Her partner chips in with that. But every single last cent of it goes towards debt. And so for me, it brings me to the next question, Brian. What is a good rule of thumb of how much income actually should be going towards debt repayment versus
life, exactly.
What is
your
the rule of thumb
current expenses versus all the ones you spent last year?
Yes. So when it comes to the rule of thumb, we're looking at what you're spending in terms of your needs, what you're spending on your wants, and what you're spending towards your debt as well as your savings. So if we were to put it in percentages, the most common one would be the 50-30-20 rule. The 50-20-30 rule says at least 50% of your income should go towards your needs. That is being able to pay for your groceries, that is being able to pay for your home, to pay for transportation, to go to work, school fees. And then 30% should then go towards your wants. And then 20% should then be divided between your debts as well as your savings. So that is what the rule of thumb in most cases refers to.
But I think that would make most people unable to.
Exactly.
Most people have far more debt than that.
Most definitely.
And
most
I mean, definitely. When someone comes into debt review, so we're going to talk about debt review a little bit later. When somebody comes into debt review, generally at what level of debt to income do you see? So at what point are they now beyond, you know, they just can't make it anymore?
When we're looking at a debt to income ratio of more than 60%, to some even runs up to 80%. So that means 80% of the salary is going towards the debt. Mm. That is where you see now that is a huge red flag.
Mm.
And definitely this person does need assistance and a quick intervention in terms of assisting them. Because if you look at a person with a debt to income ratio of more than 60%, 70%, or 80%, that means only 20% is going towards your living expenses. And that is not enough. No one can survive with just 20% while paying 80% towards your debt. So definitely the highest we've seen, we've seen 80% and even above that. And definitely we know that an immediate intervention is needed.
But if I don't want to go into debt review, so I'm listening to this and I'm saying I'm starting to accumulate debt, I'm wanting to buy a car, I'm wanting to buy a house, I'm wanting to do these things. What do you think the maximum? I always, in my mind, I kind of think 40%. I think if you're taking on all of these debts, you shouldn't really go beyond 40% of your salary to those debt repayments. You think that's a fair figure to stay healthy, stay credit healthy?
40% is healthy, but in order to be safe, we can put it at 30%.
At 30%.
At least
not a lot of people managing that, Brian.
Yes. Because I'm just thinking of someone, perhaps they earn 20,000 rand. House, car, just on that, that's already at 10,000, perhaps. Mm. And that's 50% already. Mm. So I think it's important to bring the benchmarks, the rule of thumbs. But how do you make sure that, yes, you're not overextending yourself, but still have a little bit of room to live?
And I think also you do need to differentiate between the types of debt. You're talking about good and bad debt, right?
Yes.
So if you're paying off a house and, you know, say it's a house and car that's pushing you to 50%. I'm not saying 50%. You should be at 50%, but say you are there. That's quite different to somebody whose credit cards, store cards, personal loans, and car repayment are taking them to 50%. You know, that one is just pure consumption debt that's not really getting, you know, not really getting them anywhere in life. So I think it is also probably for me, Mapelo, about, yeah, about making sure that that isn't made up of short-term debt. I don't know. I wouldn't want to be going above 10% on short-term debt if it was me. And Brian, what would you say?
Definitely. I know sometimes it's hard to keep it, but that is why we're saying the 50% kind of makes provision for that housing for the 50% that is for your needs. But when it comes to debts, it's very, very important to keep it at a minimum so that you are able to survive on a monthly basis. Once you've managed to pay on your bond and your car, then you have enough for you to also survive in terms of schoolings, your groceries and all of that. So keeping a debt at a minimum is very, very important. That is why my advice would be keep it as low as 30% as you can. But we live in an economy where, unfortunately, people would see it otherwise and look at and say 30% is quite a small amount to distribute towards debts.
But again, if you're going past 30% on because of a home loan, very different to going past 30% because of personal
unsecured debt.
You know, there's a saying in Sesotho where we say, or a lot of people rather say, motho o phela ka sekoloto. Right. So one cannot live without debt. And sometimes people have that mentality, and that's what needs to change. And so you are saying with what makes a good credit score? Is it the debt mix? Is it, okay, you have a bond, you have a car, does that make it better? Or is it okay if I just have credit card, overdraft, personal loan?
It would appear that if you just have a whole lot of very, as long as you're paying.
A good credit mix, if you see that, okay, you have a bond, you have a car, and maybe a credit card, that makes it a bit stronger. Or it, as long as you have debt and you're paying it, it doesn't matter.
So it does matter as long as you've got good debt that you pay on time, then your credit score should be good. But a lot of people will then confuse it with taking payday loans, for instance, and thinking that also would boost your credit score. Remember, a payday loan, you take it this month, you pay it back the next month. And some people now get into a circle where they are unable to survive without that payday loan, and it becomes a monthly thing. So when that is the case, then it shows desperation when it comes to the credit providers if you want to accumulate things like assets. So it means you cannot survive with your salary. So not all debt is good debt. And not all mixes will definitely put your credit score at high. We need to mix it with proper good debt, such as a cap on a personal loan here and there, a cap on a credit card here and there. Home loan definitely is part of the good ones. But remember, what determines your credit score is also the payment behavior. That is the most important part of it. That is what the credit providers want to see. As long as the payment behavior is good, you're able to pay on time every month, then your credit score should be good.
That's a propensity to pay. It's quite interesting because it's psychological.
Yes.
So you will have people, it doesn't actually matter how much you earn. Some people believe in paying their debts and some people do not. And the credit provider wants to know, am I dealing with somebody who prioritizes debt repayment? And that's, I think, why payment history is so important.
Yeah. But I like what Brian brought in, that a lot of people, even some of the mentees, are living on payday loans, right? And that eventually will hamper you. If you go to a bank, for example, and now you're ready to buy a house, that behavior, they're going to take a look at it and say, well, if this person has to access payday loans just to survive, will she be able to pay her bond on time, in time, every single month? So I think also be aware of such things.
Very good point. But I want to now talk a little bit about credit cards, Brian, because I'm picking up, and I have for now 3 or 4 years now, when we're dealing with people, seeing this credit card just ramping up. And of course, the problem with credit card debt is that you pay back so little of it. It's not like a personal loan. A personal loan, you take the personal loan and you know it's going to be paid off in 3 years or 5 years. It's there and you make your repayments. You have no plan to pay off your credit card. There is no plan to pay off a credit card. because you only pay a small percentage every month. And I want to relate to you a story that I actually got a phone call last week from, we will not mention the bank. I have a credit card with them. It's just a basic entry-level credit card, which I use if I need to book a flight or something. So I don't really use it that much. And they said, hi, we would like to offer you a higher level, you know, credit card, the benefit of which is that you will not have to pay back 5% of your outstanding balance, but only 3% every month. In other words, it'll take me longer to pay off the debt. I don't think people begin to understand that that is how credit cards work.
True, true. And that is absolutely right. And I like when you're saying they called you to offer that. That is what most people fall in. That is a trap that most people fall into. They will tell you about these nice different benefits, the increase in terms of the limits, and but we should be very, very careful of that. And as well as you mentioned something very important, paying the bare minimum on a credit card, we don't realize that the interest is compounding. Therefore, it will take you even longer, number one, to pay off the balance on the outstanding credit card. Number two, the interest keeps on rocking up sky high. So it's very, very important to look at your credit card, try to pay as much as you can on a monthly basis, or try to use it in such a way that you pay off the balance the very same month, then you will be saving a lot when it comes to the interest and the balances that you would.
I did some maths on it. Yeah. So if I'm only paying off 3% of the balance and I have a 20,000 Rand credit card, say I owe 20,000 Rand on my credit card, I don't use it anymore. I stick it in the drawer, I don't use it, but I only pay back the 3%. Now, remember, it's 3% on a reducing balance. So if it's 20,000, I'm paying back 600. But as it drops to 10,000, I pay back 300. So the repayment keeps reducing as well. Yeah. It would take me 25 years to pay it off. 25 years. And this is what people don't realize. And this is what's being sold to them. I was being sold a credit card so that I could stay in debt for longer. Yeah. That's literally what the offer was. Yes. Don't worry, an article will be written about it. But it worries me. And I must tell you, my son went to fetch his debit card from his bank. He's 21. He's a student. They would not give him his debit card until he had gone into his banking app. They'd had a look at his credit score and informed him that a credit card would boost his credit score.
Yeah.
He's 21. I'm sorry, guys. The way banks are pushing credit cards is not okay. It's not healthy. And please, they are not there to help you. And I actually am getting very angry with the banks now, because I think that this pushing of credit cards is, I am seeing very visibly, leading a lot of people into financial difficulty.
And I think it's unethical, Maya. You know, I showed someone that exact calculation that it's going to take you 20 years. And on top of that, instead of paying the 20,000, you're going to end up paying 53,000 Rand. It was
53,000.
20,000 Rand credit card, you're going to end up paying 53,000 Rand. That is a lot of money. And I showed her the calculation. She was astounded. Mm. And now she started putting a little bit of money. And what I want to say, please do not take for granted putting in an extra 200 Rand. What you can do,
makes a big difference.
It makes a big difference. But now my question, Brian, is if you have credit card debt and you're finding it just unmanageable, is it a good idea perhaps to take on a consolidation loan?
In most cases, I would say no. The reason why I'm saying that is because the interest that you are going to accumulate on the interest on the consolidation loan in most cases turns out to be higher than the interest that you will be paying, for instance, on a personal loan or a credit card. So look at the interest differences between the consolidation loan as well as the credit card. It's very, very important. For now, for instance, you're taking a credit card with a balance of 10,000 Rand that you would have paid off maybe in 12 months. Instead of doing that, you're going to take up now a 20,000 Rand consolidation loan, which is going to be longer, number one. Number two, it's going to be the interest is going to be higher. So that is what you need to look at. So the first priority should be trying to pay off your credit card, number one, as quick as you can. You mentioned something very important. An extra 200 Rand into a personal loan, into a credit card, goes a very long way. Remember, One of the most important things is every bank has what we call an amortization table that shows the amount of interest that you're paying into the particular loan, as well as the amount that goes into the actual loan. So the bank cannot charge you interest twice in 1 month. So once you've done paying your normal installment, you have paid the interest for that particular month. Therefore, if you put an extra 200 rand, it goes into the actual balance. Therefore, the interest that you pay or that's going to be calculated the next month becomes lesser than what you would have paid if you did not put that extra 200 rand. So it's very, very important. It's a very valid point. Try to put in as much as you can, as quick as you can, so that you can close up the credit card. Even if, sorry, Maya, you mentioned that as the balance goes down, the installment also goes down. But the most important thing is trying to sticking to the original installment into that particular credit card so that you can close it quicker.
That's a very good point, Brian. And I just wanted to tell you, though, one of my mentees I got to do shop around for a loan because of she has a couple of large loans. And I want to talk about that and then chat a little bit about debt review. But she's got a couple of loans. And I said to her, well, what would happen if we consolidated that, because she's just struggling to meet her repayments at this point. So she shopped around and she spoke to two banks. Mm. One offered her an interest rate of 15% and the other interest rate of 25%. Same person, same credit score, same amount, same everything.
25%.
One was 25% and the other was 15%. Mm. So, you know, it's really worth shopping around. We've spoken about being a homeowner and shopping around for credit for your home loan. But don't just go and take the first loan. And in fact, when we did the maths, it made a lot of sense for her to consolidate because her credit card was sitting at 20%. So I agree with you. There's no like do this. It's go and look. Look at the quote. Look at total cost. What are the fees? And what was interesting is that the bank, so it was actually her own bank that offered her the better rate, but they also waived credit insurance because they said, well, you don't need credit insurance because she's got good life cover and all the rest. So that helped her as well. So it was very interesting. I was shocked. I did not expect such a difference. So really, really important if you are going to look at consolidation loans or anything like that to really do a comparison. Mm.
But when is it a good time then to speak to your creditors? So now you can feel that this debt is unmanageable. Should I be calling them? Should I duck and hope that it all goes away eventually?
When do you start calling your credit providers? When you start having more month than money. Basically, what it means is you are now struggling to finance your living expenses as well as being able to pay your debts. Then you know that there is a problem now starting to brew on your finances. That is a good time to start relooking at everything, relooking at what you owe, who you owe, the type of interest that you have on your loans. Start calling your banks to see if you can get better rates on your bank. But if that is not the case, then start seeking assistance earlier on at that particular time as possible.
I also feel like we should have some sort of a script, Maya, that we can give to people to say, you know,
how to have that conversation with your bank.
Because I think it can be terrifying. You're already seeing the red flags. But this institution looks so big. Mm. Who am I going to talk to? I think maybe just let's take it up on ourselves, come up with
maybe
like
Brian,
a little...
Maybe Brian, we'll chat to Brian. Maybe we will. Brian and I, the three of us will sit together and come up with a nice little script saying, dear and Bank X, I think it's a really good idea because I think it can feel very, very intimidating. But certainly I've noticed that since COVID was a big game changer. The banks have been a lot more accommodating around around having those conversations and trying to find ways because, you know, people went through a very, very tough period. And that is still carrying on. A lot of people are still carrying a lot of that debt that they accumulated over there. But I want to talk a little bit about debt review now. It's one of the reasons we also invited you on because, you know, I've got a couple of people who I really can see will benefit from debt review. But people are so scared to enter it. And I completely understand, because I'm one of the journalists who are writing about some of the horrendous things that are happening in debt review, because unfortunately, not all people are, not all debt counselors are above board. Yeah. And which is why we have, we've invited Summit on, because we know that they're an ethical, they do things ethically.
Definitely.
But maybe just take us through, when do you recommend somebody enter debt review, and just sort of the pros and cons, and when would you say you do enter it, you don't enter it? You know, give us a little bit of.
I think it goes back to what I just said now. When you start having more monthly money, that's when you then need to realize and take steps into seeking assistance when it comes to your finances. And approaching companies, for instance, like Summit, can definitely go a long way to assist you with programs such as Debt Review. Debt Review is one of the programs that are there to assist over indebted consumers who cannot afford to pay on their loans anymore, and who would also like to protect their assets, because Debt Review is also a safe space for people that have assets that are threatened, for instance, by the bank that they will be repossessed. So Debt Review is one of the applications that can assist the consumer, number one, to pay off their debts at a lower rate, as well as at a lower installment. So it combines everything that you owe, and then you only pay one reduced installment towards all of your accounts. But not only do we reduce the interest, the installment, but we also reduce the interest. And with Summit, we've had success rates of reducing the interest up to sometimes 5%, less than 10%. So that is those are some of the good rates that you can get when you join a program such as Debt Review. So when we're looking at the pros of Debt Review, definitely you saving your assets under Debt Review. You also paying one low installment for everything that is combined. Your assets, as I said, are protected under Debt Review. The only thing that scares the people about joining Debt Review is the fact that you will not be able to accumulate any further debt while you are under the program. And I always say, if you go to a doctor or if you come to me to assist you with your finances, and while I'm busy assisting you with your finances, you go and accumulate more and do the same mistakes that I'm trying to help you with, is it fair? And in most cases, the answer would be no. So that is why while you are under the debt counseling program, you will not be able to get any further debt until you are done with the program. So that is the only downside of it that people see, that they won't be able to accumulate any further debt. But while you are under the program, you will be assisted, you will be protected. And the nice thing about Debt Review or Debt Counseling with Summit is that Summit, through the Foster Foundation, is the only company in South Africa that offers free debt counseling. Mm-hmm. So you don't pay any statutory fees when it comes to debt counseling. So you start paying your creditors from the first month.
Wow. That's why, hence Brian's on here, because I know about Foster. And they really have changed the model by saying that you don't, because what often happens, this is another frustration, that people say, well, I've entered Debt Review, and they start getting letters from creditors saying you haven't paid. Because for the first 2 months, it goes to paying the debt counseling and the legal fees.
Yes.
And so you only pay in month three. And people are like, but I've entered this to pay off my debt, and now I haven't paid any debt for 2 months. And that creates also another really big sticking point for people. So I think that's been a very good innovation.
Yeah. For me, the question on why can't I access credit? You are struggling. And the fact that you're not going to go into Debt Review because you can't access credit, it beats the whole purpose of you going into this program. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the wrong question or the wrong approach. Think about it. You are already in trouble. You should not be accessing any further credit whatsoever.
So I took someone, when I did Money Makeover, we took Johan through Debt Review, one of my candidates then. And he was terrified because his credit card was his emergency fund. And that's what people worry about. They don't have access to an emergency fund. So one of the first things we did was make sure that because he was in debt review and his repayments had been reduced, we put a little bit of that saving into an emergency fund immediately so that he was starting to build up an emergency fund whilst paying off his debt. And I think it's important to have that sort of dual approach because that's what people worry about. Life happens and then what? Yeah. I don't have access to that credit line that I used to have.
True. And the nice thing, you would be shocked that Summit offers that for every debt counseling individual that goes into debt counseling with Summit. So we've got what we call Summit Save. Summit Save is part of your installment goes towards your Summit Save account. So while you are under debt counseling, a certain portion of your installment is being saved on your behalf for emergencies. So at any time, if you have an emergency, you are able to withdraw from that pocket to cover up those emergencies. Or when you are done with the debt counseling program and you never used your savings, that means that is your savings that are coming to you to start on a new slate. So definitely an emergency savings account is very important because we need to remember emergencies are also number one reason why people go into debt. And if we can help put aside for emergencies, then we are able to cover up those emergencies as they come. Remember, in emergency, I always say it's not something that comes and knocks and say, Brian, I'm coming to you next week or tomorrow. Mm. So we need to be prepared for such. Mm. We need to have an emergency savings account so that we are able to cover for those emergencies as they arise and we don't have to run to machinisas. Yeah. We don't have to run to credit cards. And so forth. You mentioned something very important earlier on, Maya, regarding COVID. During COVID, a lot of people also lost part of their income and some people lost their jobs. And having a savings account now after COVID, we've seen that it's even more important. Mm-hmm. And one would ask, what is a healthy savings account? And we would say it's at least having 3 to 6 times your net salary saved into your account. So should anything threaten your job, should anything threaten your employment, you are able to survive for the next 3 to 6 months while you're looking for another job. So definitely emergency savings account is very, very important. Mm-hmm. Through Summit and debt counseling, we do have it automatically for anyone that joins through Summit Save.
And Tessie, I actually didn't know about Summit Save. I knew about the waiving of the fees, but I didn't know about Summit Save. So I mean, it's really, really well done. Yeah, excellent.
100%. And I think for our listeners, we're going to leave Summit's details in the caption so that if you find yourself needing to go this route, they definitely can help you.
Definitely a good option. But thank you so much, Brian. And thank you to our listeners. And Maplo, in our next episode, we're going to be taking a little bit of a different view. We're going to be chatting to Lebo. She lives with a disability. And we're looking at how to manage your finances as a person with a disability. And we've got a financial planner working with us on that one as well. I'm quite excited about that conversation.
I'm very excited, Maya, because, you know, I've worked with the National Council of People Living with Disabilities and giving financial education, you realize that you had to get someone who can interpret. You have to get a set specific cost. So what we consume on a normal day-to-day basis, there's added extra costs.
Yeah.
And for people living with disabilities, I think this is going to be a very, very informative podcast.
Absolutely. So tune in for that as well. Thank you.